This is Alex Kraner.
This is Dave Collum.
This is Bruce Party.
Hi, this is Jeremy McKenzie, the Raging Dissident.
Hello, this is Maxime Bernier.
This is Danny Bulford.
This is Chuck Prodnick.
This is Vance Crowe, and you're listening to the Sean Newman Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, folks. Happy Wednesday. How's everybody doing today? Well, the world is a mess. Don't think we can argue with that one, folks. And 2024 is shaping up to be a geopolitical storm. Also, don't know if we can argue with that. And now might be the perfect time to diversify some of your hard-earned savings into physical money that can't be printed. Talking gold and silver. That's Silver Gold Bull. Look no further than there. They're North America's premier precious metals dealers. They got state-of-the-art distribution centers in Alberta and Nevada. And they ensure fast, fully insured, discreet shipping right to your doorstep. And they offer a full suite of services to help you buy, sell, and store precious metals. They got a special offer going on right now. Everyone's favorite silver coin, the Royal Canadian Mint Silver Maple Leaf. This offer is not available on their site and is only open for Sean Newman Podcast listeners. Call or email Graham for details. It's all down in the show notes. Or go to silvergoldbull.ca if you've never been there. If you want to just say, hey, thanks for supporting the podcast, would appreciate that as well. All of it helps, and I appreciate you guys paying attention. And Silver Gold Bull coming along for the ride. Caleb Taves, Renegade Acres, they got the community spotlight April 27th. SMP presents returns to Lloydminster, the Cornerstone Forum. It's going to have Martin Armstrong virtually, then Luongo, Craner, Sims, Stone, Prodnick, and Thorup all on stage. It's going to be a full day from roughly 9 a.m. till supper time, or well, after supper time. We'll have supper, and then there will be a little bit of light entertainment. Sunday morning, here's the big news, okay? I had been holding off I'd been holding off on explaining the idea until I confirmed all three speakers. So Sunday morning, the Cowboy Preacher, Tannen Ernede, and Cam Milliken. For the podcast listeners, you'll know who the first two are because obviously they've been on multiple times. Or the Cowboy Preacher, I guess, is on here Thursday, so that's tomorrow. And Tannen Ernede, you know, I've been telling him if he started preaching, or you know, I'd probably come. Well, I've created a spot. The Cowboy Preacher, Tannen Ernede, and Cam Milliken, three guys gonna get up on stage, have a little bit of a keynote speech. I don't know how better to do it. In my mind, it's kind of like a miniature SMP presents on a Sunday morning, and the theme is gonna be Jesus Christ, the Cornerstone, and see where that goes. We're flushing that idea out as we go. I think that's gonna be a fun Sunday morning, and I hope. You know, if you come in for the 27th, you'll stick around for the 28th. If you aren't around for the 27th, the 28th is going to be open to the public. So I think if you're interested at all, please come on down. And I think that'll be, well, there you go. 27th is going to be lights out. 28th is going to be something I never thought I would try. And we're going to have a little bit of fun with it. And with some interesting men in Tannen Ernede, the Cowboy Preacher, and Cam Milliken, I promise they won't disappoint. The Deer and Steer Butchery, Butcheress. That's right. They got a butcheress, a dealer in meat, mother of two, who's born and raised in small town of Wadena, Saskatchewan. Small town Sask girl cutting your meat here in Lloydminster, just on the outskirts, west side of town. She's been cutting meat since she was 16. She took her retail meat cutting at Nate, went on to apprentice at Real Deal Meats in Edmonton, and worked out of Ontario in the St. Lawrence Market, which is one of the biggest fresh produce, meat, and seafood vendors in Canada. I feel like every time I see produce, I produce is what I want to say. I don't know. Every week I hit that word, and that's what it is. She's ready and excited to step full force into butchering with the deer and steer. So if you got an animal, reach out, 780-870-8700. If you just want to reach out and say hello, that's the number as well. And happy to have her aboard and in the community chopping up your animals. I shouldn't say chopping. Carving your animals? That might be more fit. Erickson Agro Incorporated out of Irma, Alberta. That's Kent and Tasha Erickson, family farm, raising four kids, growing food for our community and this great country. April 1st is coming real fast. A couple things on it. Obviously, your taxes are going up. April 1st also marks 2 years full-time podcasting for this guy. And if you're subscribing to Substack, we are going to turn on the paywall April 1st. Okay, there's all your info. If you've never flipped over to Substack, that's where all the bonus exclusive, all the exclusive content goes after each episode. So, okay, I think I've got enough of there. Let's get on to that tale of the tape. first as a public speaker, coach, mentor, advocate for unschooling children. She has a background in behavioral psychology and spent decades working and volunteering in the not-for-profit sector in Calgary. The second, a registered nurse, mom of four, who has turned to homeschooling. In the county of Flagstaff, they went from three families to now 50 with over 80 kids in homeschooling. I'm talking about Tasha Fishman and Shelby Boyd. So buckle up. Here we go. Well, welcome to the Sean Newman Podcast. I'm joined by Shelby Boyd and Tasha Fishman. So thanks for hopping in, ladies.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know. I don't even know where I want to go with this. You know, I'm just like, last night was interesting. So for the audience member, last night we had our For Kids' Sake meeting. So this is going to air a few days from then. And the theme was homeschooling or maybe independent schooling.
I think alternative
education, thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. And was really surprised on the different, like, same idea, three different ways. Mm-hmm. Boom, 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 boom. And we were talking about it this morning at the book club, right? Like, we were getting in this argument about schooling, public versus homeschooling. I'm sure you ladies, everywhere you go, that's a common topic wherever you go.
In what way? What was the discussion this morning?
Whether the public system is as bad as you think.
Oh.
Right? Because, like, I don't know. Like, I guess I look at the... Well, actually, no, both of you have been on here before. I'm like, do I need to introduce you both? And I'm like, wait a second. Go back, folks, and listen to episodes Shelby was on and Tash was on a while back. The argument was basically around... whether or not pulling your kids out is the right thing to do. And, you know, with listening to you three talk last night, I'm like, well, I don't know. I think parent involvement is probably the highest priority of all, right? Whether you can, because like Shine Christian Academy, Deanna, is still teacher-led, kid-led in a school-like atmosphere, but pulling them out of the current system with a different kind of style. And then you still work, Shelby. I'm pointing at Shelby. And Tasha still work too. Who am I kidding? But the unschooling versus the, I don't know. I felt like there was a little bit of a difference there. Maybe I'm wrong on that. You're both staring at me like maybe I got that wrong.
No, I think there's a big difference. I think what was interesting is that at the end, we all talked about we would take some ideas from one another. I think we're all just navigating these wild times as parents, trying to sort it out. And there's as many alternative approaches as there are unique individual children. You know, people have to really start taking responsibility for their own families and creating roles and learning opportunities that work for them. But we've all been conditioned to believe that there's just one uniform way of learning and that it has to happen between 9 and 3 in between this brick building with kids all of the same date of manufactured times. And it's just simply not true. You know, with the argument, should we pull them out? I mean, well, you know my opinion on that one, Sean. It's if people aren't thinking of a plan B at this point, I really don't know what to say. They obviously are still sleeping under a big heavy rock, I think.
I even look at it as, and you pointed this out last night, that we forget that education is a business. I mean, just like healthcare is a business. And actually, I know I did actually have some people in the beginning question how me pulling my kids is going to affect the school system funding wise. And a couple of the homeschool moms in our group actually had people say, and for whatever reason, the number 17,000 was used per kid for our area. And so it was like, you just pulled $34,000 from our school. And I mean, I loved her response. It was, you know, their names are A, B, C, and X, Y, and Z, and I don't see them as dollar signs. And it's true. That's kind of what it comes down to. Just throwing money at the system, that money never gets to the front line. And so, yes, pulling our kids is going to affect funding in the system. But I mean, ultimately, it's what's a priority. Is just throwing money at the system going to fix it? Or is putting my kids' education and what works best for our family and our family values the most important priority? So I think it's a matter of, I don't know, that's how I look at it.
Well, I also think that we have to like get down to like the real like truth of what's happening. Like we're literally in a war. like as I see it. And most of us understand we're watching the fall of an empire of some sort. There's, you know, these systems which have raised us all, we don't trust them anymore, mm-hmm. these institutions, and we have good reason not to. And it's not to say that there's not beautiful, wonderful teachers or administrators. There are, just like any system, just like the healthcare system. But the people at the top have a specific agenda. And that's really clear between the gender ideology, the critical race theory, the climate hoax, the digitization of children into the social credit system. I mean, all of these things are happening behind the guise of something really virtuous. So if you're not looking for it, you could think, well, yeah, I don't want my child to be cyberbullied. Well, yes, I want my child to be inclusive and believe in diversity. These are all really good things. But when you start to look deeper into these agendas and the foreign dollars that are supporting it and who's actually running our government and what's happening, you see that this is a dangerous, toxic situation for our children.
Yeah, I can't. I won't argue with you on any of that because, you stare at it long enough, and the diversity thing is something that I always find funny. It's like diversity is such a lovely word, but they want diversity in everything but opinion. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. literally, we just live this, you know, yeah. and are continuing to live it. I should say, right? If you don't go along with the current thought, then you're, you know, removed from society. You think of Bill C-63, right, with what they're coming down the pipe yeah. with Online Harms Act.
Yeah.
It's like, well, who's going to define what hate is?
Yeah.
And who's going to define all these different things? And you go like, and how many of us are on a list? All of us. And it's like, it's going to be all of us. And, you know, like I look at lots of that. And you're not wrong with, you know, everybody knows this, I think, by now, right? I'm married to a school teacher, right? Mm-hmm. And I argue she is phenomenal. And there are a lot of those mm-hmm. in the school system, no different than there were nurses or doctors. But the system as a whole wants to give us one solution. This is yes. how we're going to approach it all. We talk about it from a political standpoint. The West is, in Canada, there's probably four different areas. I don't want to shortchange it here, folks. But certainly there's East, there's West, and then there's BC. And maybe, and BC, I love you. There's probably like lower mainland or something along those lines, right? But it's values. I remember Jamie Sinclair, and his head's getting big now, wherever you are, Jamie. He's a military guy. And he said, we just have different values. We just need to create our country and have our value set. And if you don't like our value set, then you just go over here. You can have your whatever value set you want over there. But the problem we have now is the people at the top are creating this value set that none of us agree with.
Yeah. Right.
Or I would say more and more each day don't agree with it. And yeah. the more you look into it, the more nefarious it gets.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't want my kids learning these things because I disagree with them.
Yeah. yeah.
And the longer it goes on, the more attractive homeschooling becomes for a lot of people. I remember telling you, and I was saying last night, Reg Hagel passed away, and I kind of forgot that he homeschooled his family and didn't realize kind of how much of a badass he was, but he showed up to all of my events and everything else. I remember thinking as a kid, the homeschoolers were the weird kind of like, you know, and now I'm like, maybe they were just onto something, right? Yeah. Maybe they just witnessed it. Now you see how many families are taking the jump. Some are surviving, some aren't. And I think that to me last night was like a really healthy message all three of you shared is how tough it is mm-hmm. to kind of like unschool, to steal your mm-hmm. line, Tasha, to unschool the parent more so than the
yes.
kid
yeah.
because you have this idea and that's the uncomfortable part, but you're seeing it all over the place. More and more families are removing themselves from the school system, which is pretty wild to watch.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, like, I think we also have to go back to understanding, like when we talk about the dark agendas that are going on, we can argue and debate them. There's enough proof to show that there are nefarious things going on behind these agendas, particularly not with any one set of teacher. And the way they've set it up is it's not in just one class. Like climate change is embedded within the math problems. Mm-hmm. Diversity is blended within the social studies and the history. And so it's that's kind of how fifth generational warfare plays out. You can't really pinpoint where and what, and it keeps the confusion high so that there's all this debate and people aren't empowering themselves to make decisions. But I go back to what just happened since 2020. How how did they get 5 billion people to line themselves up and inject themselves with poison and their children? How did that happen in the world? And the common theme that I see is the authoritative model that we've all been trained in through the school system. We have been trained and taught to not question perceived authority at all, right? To act when we are told from this perceived authority what to do, when to do it, to be quiet. There's a snitch culture that's totally bred within the school system. If you think about it, when little Johnny tells the teacher, you know, hey, like so-and-so did this and so-and-so did that, they're rewarded for that kind of behavior. And that's what we saw on a grand global scale. And so I'm saying it's not just the dark agendas. We need to take a look at this system, this 200-year-old experiment called school that has gone unchecked for far too long. Is this serving us? Is this creating critical thinkers that have a moral compass that cannot be bought or compromised? Because what I'm seeing is generations of adults who have zero integrity and that we're in a pandemic of cowardice. Well, how did that happen? It happens from mind control. Well, who's implementing the mind control and what weapons are they using to mind control the masses and socially engineer them into making such a decision as taking this kind of poison without questioning it? Well, it starts with school. So in my opinion, we need to start pulling them out. Those of us who are awake and aware, who believe in sovereignty and freedom, who want to teach those values, you cannot expect to outsource your children to these institutions that you no longer trust and believe that it's going to be fine and believe that you can undo the seed planting, the early ideologies, the politicized ideas that are being embedded in their mindset right now. I can guarantee you that if you just keep going on, by the time they're 12, the likelihood of them turning to you and calling you a bigot, a transphobe, or a climate denier is pretty high if you leave them in these.
Did you see what Saskatchewan rural municipalities did this week?
No.
No, tell us.
Here, I'll pull up the article. Rural Saskatchewan municipalities vote 95% against calling CO2 a pollutant. The resolution also calls on Premier Scott Moe's governing Saskatchewan party to remove the province from all national and international net zero plans. And so there's already like, there's little shifts happening all over the place. The thing I always think of, we have a problem, like it's like the perfect storm of all things happening all at once. Was it just the school system? Well, I guess you could argue yes, but then it bred into the college of physicians. It led into like, look where I sit, media. I find media very culpable of a ton of things. And you go, and yet people are pushing back all over the place. And as people see other people stand up, it becomes infectious. And I look at homeschooling and I go, when was homeschooling ever the cool thing to do? Never. Now it's kind of almost become a trendy thing. And people are, whether it's more accessible because of online and internet and different things like that, whether it's because, well, I don't know, maybe you can go, you can travel abroad with it, you know, because I remember in the middle of COVID, when I was still working in the oil field, there was a guy that they did virtual school because his kids were rodeo. I'm going to use athletes. Is that what you call rodeo people? Are they athletes? Cowboys? Cowgirls? I don't know. Anyways, they went down south to like Nevada for 6 months of the year and competed and did their schooling from there. So they were already like this like weird. And I mean, I don't know, that probably was there 20 years ago, but I don't know how many people were actually looking into it and doing it and felt comfortable doing it. And it seems like, you know, the more I talk to homeschooling parents, especially ones that came from like jobs where they base their life around their career and have removed themselves from that, it just seems like it's not a simple transition by any stretch of the imagination, but it feels like it's a transition that is doable in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you both talked last night. One of the fascinating questions I found was like, how many people are listening to this right now? Women in particular, could be men too, but I think women in particular that have based themselves around a career where they're like, they get up and I'm looking at Tash right now because you were talking last night. You get up and it's 6:45 and we've got to get the kids up and on and on and on and on to where you're, you know, unschooling now. And you can easily talk about that. And then I look at Shelby and I go, you had this career, you're praised for being a nurse. You're basing, I would say, a lot of your identity around your 100%. Career, working your bag off, making very good money. And then you know, you have yours taken away from you. And I believe, Tash, I don't want to overstep my here. You walk away, I believe, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And COVID plays a huge part in that. But like, how hard of a transition was that for you two ladies when you based a good chunk of who you were around what you were doing away from your children?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it definitely was a struggle. Definitely spent a lot of time working on myself and just going through that identity crisis. And ultimately what made it easier for me was my faith and just figuring out that I wasn't a nurse, like, and that never is what I was intended to be, and to fall for the lie of ingraining myself in that. And I mean, really, when we think about it, we do this from our kids, right? From when they're little, we're constantly asking them, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it's never acceptable for girls to say wife, mother, homemaker. It's like, no. What do you want to be? And so it's even just little things like that, little subtle messages that we start ingraining in them from such a young age that makes it, especially for women, that it is not okay just to be a wife and a mom, which I find so interesting with the feminist agenda, because it's supposed to be supporting all women, but not the ones who want to stay home. Like, that's not okay. You need to be more than that. And so I feel like it is a struggle as a woman. We've definitely fallen for this lie that you have to have a career outside of the home to be successful. So it did take time to decondition that and to really let go of that and just, but ultimately seeing the fruit of being home and being with my children and the relationship I got to develop and build with them, and just how amazing that was definitely worth it in the end. And I will never go back. Like, I would love to give it all up, to be honest, and just focus on being at home.
But I was saying this was my follow-up to that last night. Yep. Is like, I feel like you two are far enough along now where you're like, it's all rosy. And you got to find a way to put me back, or listeners, into your shoes in the first like month where you're like, I'm pulling my hair out. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. This sucks. What have I done? This is not going to work. And how you walked through that, because there's going to be people who are going to try homeschooling, and I know them, and they hated it. And so maybe some people just aren't cut out for it. That's possible. I assume that's possible. Can we all agree on that? That maybe some people aren't.
I'd say when you're doing public school at home, every family I know that it's failed, it's because they tried to bring school home. And that's where it's like, you left that system. Why do you want to create that system at home? And so that's the families I can think of that have all gone back, was they were trying to do school at home and they weren't leaning into that freedom of what works for you and your family and playing with that and having that flexibility. But I mean, that's...
So what's one of the things you played with? Like,
this idea of like, it was like, school's like, you know, best in the morning, so that 9 to 12. Well, that didn't work for us because we had a young toddler who was awake in the morning but napped in the afternoon. And so for us, it was easier to just flex that and go in the afternoon. Plus, it's like this idea of like, there's times when I don't want to learn or I'm having an off day, and just having that freedom to be like, you know what, we're putting the books away today and we're just going to learn in other ways, or well, even just learning in other ways. So often, like this idea that school was only bookwork. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, we can turn school into every aspect of our lives. When we're learning about fractions, when we're baking, even one day the kids and I were sitting in the hot tub and my oldest was like, Mom, when I'm 25, how old are, or when you're, you know, 45, how old am I going to be, kind of a thing. And I started off wanting to just answer it for her. And I was like, wait a minute, I can encourage you to do this. And so we started working it out together. And it was like, here we're doing math in the hot tub together. Like, it's just totally changing your mindset and realizing that, yeah, it's not public school at home. Like, we need that freedom and flexibility to flex with our family. And you can definitely speak to that with unschooling.
Well, yeah, because, you know, kids are learning all the time. And like I explained last night, the term unschooling was coined by a man named John Holt, who wrote a book called Teach Your Own. And he believed that children were not empty vessels of which needed to be filled with knowledge by all the adults around them, that they actually have a natural tendency to want to be learning all the time. And they are. And if you think about it, public school was created by industry and government only less than 200 years ago and enforced on people. It has a very dark history, actually, that has been hidden from most of us.
Forgive me, the current form of it, right?
Yeah, the current form of it, where compulsory school, where you're mandated to have your children in school by grade one. And, you know, just how did we get to a society where we outsource our children? Because prior 200 years ago, we had our kids at home on the farm in communities. They were learning from us every day. We didn't have report cards and workbooks and hoops to jump. And our kids turned out fine. And I would argue that they're better than fine because they actually knew how to grow food, store food, be self-sufficient, sustainable, make fires, create shelter for themselves. What are our kids learning now? What are they leaving with? Gender ideology? Is that what we're teaching our kids? Like, what are they actually learning? Math? Like, what do you actually remember from school beyond the couple projects that you enjoyed, your friends that you liked, and maybe one or two teachers that actually saw you for who you really were?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. What do you remember?
Small town school. And then I guess I went into Lloyd after that. Certainly math. I remember math. Like, I loved math. Like,
so if I sit down and give you some grade 5, 6 questions, grade 7 questions, you're going to know how to do them all.
Not now. It's different now.
Long form,
but that's what I'm saying.
Long form math, yes. Probably when it comes to like triangle, SOHCAHTOA and all that.
Geotrig
thing. Yeah. Like,
when
did
we use Geotrig?
But then, true. But then you get past like grade 7 or 8 and it went into, like, I remember imaginary numbers and being in school and being like, this is stupid. When am I ever going to use this? Like,
and when did you ever use it?
And that's probably around the time where I fell off. Because like math, I loved it.
Yeah.
Loved math and gym. Those two things were amazing.
So you remembered what you loved.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I got taught handwriting. And I remember taking my ACT to get into college in the States. And I can't remember where the heck I had to go for that. Doesn't matter. But part of it was to write a paragraph in handwriting. And I was like, oh, okay. So like, I don't use handwriting anymore. I don't want to. But it's funny. It's kind of like riding a bike. You start, anyways. So I wrote it out, and it looked. I was like very ashamed of my handwriting because I hadn't used it in so long. And the course instructor's like, "Holy crap! Where did you learn how to handwrite?" I'm like, "Oh, that was like that was one of the things we learned in grade 5 and 6. We had to handwrite like every week." Mm-hmm. And so I guess I remember a bunch of those things. I also come from the time though, Tasha, of like we still sang "O Canada" in the morning, which I think. Some schools around here still do, I think. And we had the Lord's Prayer. And I don't know. Like, I do remember that. I remember those things.
Yeah, you remember things that were significant to you, maybe something that lit you up. And so my point is that 12 years, we give our children up the best hours of the day, the best days of the week for the best years of their life. We have to go back to the basics. Like, why did we have children? Did we have children so that we can outsource them to strangers?
Yeah, because I want to get rid of them.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, if you're going on a vacation and you have to leave your pet with, let's say, a pet babysitter, you would probably do more research on that pet babysitter or that kennel than you would do when you pass your children over into an institution. We all just blindly just give them up because we've been trained that if they want to become productive, happy members of society, they need to go through these steps.
And I would say that most people are way too trustful.
Of course they are,
right?
Especially after what happened.
So case in point, I bring this up a lot. When we were looking at day homes for our children, because my wife obviously teaches, and when we had young ones, she stayed home for a time, and I took paternity leave for a little time. That was a lot of fun. There was some backlash on a dad's. That was weird. But we approached day home. I remember doing the gauntlet. I was so tired by the end, because instead of just going to the first one and this is going to be the one, we went to a lot. And when we found the one, it was like, well, they're still there. That's mm-hmm. how. But we went to one that ended up getting busted for pedophilia.
Whoa.
Like had cameras in the room. I remember seeing the guy. I remember when he walked around the corner and being like, this ain't the place. This is not the place. I don't know why it's not the place, but I got a feeling in my stomach that I don't like. And schools is probably very similar. I would agree with you that people just hand over the kids, assume everything's right, and then the teachers are going to be right and the right fit. But I think a doctor is the same way.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You walk into a doctor, they say something. How many of us are inclined to get a second opinion? Oh, it's effort. Oh, I'll just take the pills. I'll do whatever.
Right.
It's like,
That's right.
And
it's even been made difficult because how often, like, you have to have a family doctor, right? And there's, if you can't just get a second opinion from any doctor, they don't have the space. So it's even been made difficult to do that. And I'd say even more so with public school, like you have the public school for your area that your kids are supposed to go to. If you want them to go to a different public school for whatever reason, you now have to drive them. There's no bus for that. And so I think too, it's some people do it for convenience. Well, I can just put you on the bus for this school.
Convenience is a huge part of our life these days.
Versus doing what is actually beneficial for your family.
Yes.
It takes extra work to do that.
Yes. And when I first started podcasting, my mother was the vehicle I drive now. Shout out to my mom. She's great. But it was a sketch vehicle. I live in Alberta. So in order to bring it over to Alberta, you have to get a safety done. Okay. So right. I take it in on the first shop. I go to the registry. They give me some form. I can't remember what it is. Costs what? $10. Maybe it's 50. It doesn't matter. Walked in. They looked at the vehicle and said $3,000 worth of, you know, fixes. And I'm like,
whoa.
So I went back because in my brain, I want a second opinion. So I'm back to the Alberta registry and they're like, nobody does that. No, you don't need it. You got your, and I'm like, no, I want another one. Is it illegal? And they're like, well, no. And I'm like, okay, so charge me the money. And so they charge me another 10 or 50 bucks, whatever, it doesn't matter. Because I'm like, for the $100 it's going to cost me now, I want to find out if it actually needs it. I took it into the next place and the guy walked out after like an hour. He's like, where'd you get this vehicle from? I'm like, my mom. He's like, you got to tell her kudos. I can't find a single thing wrong with it. So I went from a $3,000 bill to a $100 bill for checking it for an hour or whatever, plus the extra 50 bucks or whatever it was to get. But how many people are just like, well, here's the money and get it fixed and move on. And the thing was, is when I went and paid the bill for them looking at, because I had to pay the registry twice, I had to pay an hour of looking at it over here and an hour of looking at it over here. The hour that was going to charge me called me an asshole for not going with them. And I'm like, well, I just don't have $3,000 lying around. I'm a broke podcaster. I just got to try and figure my ways through this. But there's so many of us that just look at everything and go, that's just the only way.
Yeah, we concede.
And one thing about the freedom community that I really enjoy is there's never one way. And we all know it. It's like, well, and we saw it last night with the three of you ladies. So I'm like, here's three different ways to do the exact bloody same thing. Mm-hmm. Pull your kids out of the school system and get it to work for how you parent, I think.
Yeah. So going back to what you said, like for your viewers to understand like that at the beginning stages, like how the mindset. So for me, I always had Tony Robbins in the back of my head where he always says you have to burn the boats to get to the island, right? So for me, I could see the hysteria of COVID. Like I said, I've had a spiritual awakening around all of that. And I could see the impending danger. So I didn't know what I was doing, but I just knew I wasn't going to do that. I just knew my kids weren't going to be in that environment. I had the illusion that I was going to be this awesome homeschooling mom. And I went out and bought all the curriculum and I made my entire kitchen look like a kindergarten classroom. And I had my timetable set up like that woman talked about last night with the check marks. Okay, 9 to 12, we're going to do this. Then we're going to have lunch. Then we're going to have recess. It's going to be amazing. And it wasn't at all. And that's like she had said, Shelby, that it's when you're trying to emulate or compare yourself to the very thing that you're turning from. Mm-hmm. It's when you're trying to take what they do at school and do it in your home. That is why most people fail and say, oh my gosh, or they experienced what we all did on a global scale with COVID. And they actually think that that's homeschooling when all your kids are on different devices, doing different classes and you're trying to work at home and that there's nothing even close to that. So the entire process, I always say to parents is take one calendar year off. Nobody died and nobody failed in life because they didn't go to school for 1 year. Just take it year by year, but take that 1 year to really reconnect, to unhook from the system that has been, you know, had its claws in you, in your children. If any of you have been through the school system, especially since 2020, you have trauma. We have a PTSD. If you were wearing masks, if you were social distancing, if you were being yelled at, if you were coerced about the vaccines, all of the things that happened to us, take that year off to reconnect, to heal with your kids, to just pretend like every day is a Saturday. I remember my mentor telling me, I remember when I was just freaking out and I called her, I went to this Facebook group and she was volunteering some time and I said, oh my gosh, and I don't know, because I felt I had to entertain my kids like 24/7. And she said, put a deck of cards on the table and go have a bath, girl. That's just what she said. And it was like middle of the day. And I was like, oh, I can? I'm allowed? Like a lot of this is about remembering, about deprogramming ourselves. We have been conditioned to believe, A, that we're not qualified mm-hmm. to do this, that other people outside of our family are better qualified to educate and teach our kids because what, they're certified from some woke university? Like, when you actually understand it, it's hilarious, right? It's like the joke's on us. So it's just like, okay, I don't have to be responsible for every waking moment. Now, it's different when they're really little, but I tell people, you've been a natural unschooling parent from 0 to 5, mm-hmm. from zero, from the day they were born until you felt, I have to hand them over to this institution. You were doing, this is what unschooling is. You taught them to eat, you taught them to drink, to play, you nurtured them, you loved them, you learned things without report cards, without jumping through hoops, without IPPs, without teachers telling you this and that. You know, you taught them, you taught them how to speak a language, you know? And we do this naturally. This is the most natural thing. And it's been slowly taken away from us. We've slowly given our consent and our authority to something outside of ourselves. It is our God-given sovereign right mm-hmm. to be with our children. And this idea of the feminist movement, it's such a con. I mean, I purported to be a feminist in university. And when you actually wake up to the fact that, oh, wait a minute, it's so the government can tax the other half of the population and raise our kids to be their own and, you know, raise them into social justice warriors to break down the family unit. Oh, that's what the feminist movement's about, right? And I'm not saying that women shouldn't work. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have the choice. I still work. I'm an entrepreneur by heart. My kids are seeing me do all sorts of stuff and I have them involved. So do you have to change your life like 180 degrees? Absolutely you do. Is it going to be easy? No. But nothing worth it is.
Totally.
And once you burn the boats to get to the island and you're like, well, we're in it. You know, if you're going to do this wishy-washy, well, let's try it.
Yeah.
And then I'll tell you, there's another way that parents are, you know, we're lazy. We're inherently lazy. We're going to go and we're going to say, I want you to tell me where to put my kid now if I pull them out. I want you to tell me which curriculum to use. How about you just ditch all that for now and just reconnect with your kid?
Yes.
Why don't you find out what kind of learner they are? Why don't you find out what lights them up? What's sets them on fire, what their interests are. Why don't you get on and play Roblox and Minecraft with them and see what lights them up and what they're learning and who they're talking to? I mean, we are so conditioned to outsource them to everyone else, coaches, sleepovers, teachers, tutors, screw the kids.
And talk about that more, like it's been normalized to not want to be with your children. Like how often do we hear parents say, oh, spring break, Christmas break, I can't wait for them to go back. And I don't mean to sound like I don't mean to offend and judge people who say that.
I just went to Jamaica and left my kids. So that was
sorry. I don't mean to sound like I'm knocking you.
That's all right. But that's all right. We're going to have it out. I'm ready.
It's good. But it's like it's become normalized to not want to spend time with your children. Like totally going on a vacation every once in a while. Great. I think it's great. It's important to put your marriage first as well. 100% agree. And having time together, dating again, all of that. But it's just become so normalized and it's okay to like disconnect ourselves from our children, right? Like it's okay to, well, and even like we were talking this morning
mommy
about
wine
this,
time.
Yes, the self-care movement that moms have, it's being pushed on mom culture where it's like, being with your children 24/7 is perceived as a bad thing.
Yeah. And I'm like, I need to drink by Friday because I deserve it. I need to drink at this play date because we deserve it. There's an absolute program out there of girls just want to have fun. Women have it so hard. Oh my gosh, you're a stay-at-home mom. You need to have this. And let's go poison ourselves with alcohol together in a group while the kids run around. It's absolutely ridiculous and it's part of the mind control agenda.
It is. And it's even, sorry.
But I laugh because from a man's side, the same thing plays out in the men's side, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, like we're supposed to, you know, there's the, I don't know, it's the, you work real hard, you get to the weekend and then it's beers and sports and, you know, a bunch of different things. And it's like, are we saying you can never have a beer? No. But at some point in time, you got to put on your pants, be a man and go about being around your kids and everything else. What was I telling you last night? One of the most shocking things about 3 years ago, we went for an 11-day road trip in a RAV4 with the three kids. The youngest would have been 2. And if you've ever been to RAV4, there is no room. We were on top of one another and we thought we were insane. Everybody thought we were insane. And when I look back on it, I'm like, that was the funnest 11 days I've had in a long time. So what are we doing this year? We're doing 20, well, hopefully 21 days. And let's be very clear. At times I'm like, this might be a bit much, but I'm like, I'm not going to regret it. No. Like if there's anything being around my family, I don't regret that. And yet me and my wife, I don't know how hard Mel had to pull me on it. I should be very clear. But I remember thinking, you know, like, case in point, we got the Never Sweats hockey tournament. I still play rec hockey. We got a big tournament coming up in about 10 days with my brothers and some friends coming in, my old college roommate, that type of thing. And last year, we let the kids go with grandma for the weekend so we didn't have to worry about them. And yet we got talking about it after, and Mel's like, I just like the kids come watch me play volleyball, because she plays volleyball on the same weekend and I play hockey. And I'm like, well, we just keep the kids around. Like,
totally.
It'll change the weekend, but not as much as I really think. And it'd probably be healthier for us. And so some of that is just growing up too. And so when you talk about the mom culture, I just think of the dad culture. Like it's both. It's this change of going from only worrying about yourself to worrying about other people. And that's very, you have to, like, I don't know if we got a selfish culture. Would you agree with that?
Oh, very selfish.
Where you only think about yourself. Yes. And having kids, the hard thing to get the old motor running is to, like, think about somebody else's for a bit instead of yourself.
Well, that's like one of the number one reasons I hear parents say is, I can't homeschool my kids. I can't quit my job or can't do this or can't do that. Like, we only get our children for 18 years, you know, each, really. And so you can't put them first. Like, that's what we're meant to do. Being a parent does come with sacrifices. Like, it's a short season, and it's been made to be this bad thing to put them first. And it's like, no, why did you have children then, is my thought. Like, I love my children. And the idea for me of when they were five to send them off to school, it actually broke my heart. Like, I'm like, now someone else is going to get the best of you 5 days a week. I'm like, no, I'm not done with you yet. And that was even my oldest when we started kindergarten, and she went 2-3 days a week. She was an absolute wreck when she came home. And I remember thinking, like, I don't like this. Like, you are, and she loves school. She really did. She did well. It was, you know, she's fine. But she'd come home and it was a wreck. Like, we were all walking on eggshells because she needed that safe space to just, like, melt down and kind of just, she needed that. But it was so hard because it was no longer to be get the best of our child. And for me, that wasn't acceptable. I wanted the best of my child and that relationship with her. And that's where I say, like, it is going to be hard for parents. If you do have that, if you've normalized and fell for that mentality of it's okay to outsource your children, to have this attitude of, like, I can't wait for them to go back, it's going to be hard for you to wrap around the idea of being with your kids 24/7. But there is so much beauty in that and the relationship that comes from it. I'm with my kids 24/7, and I actually find I need less time away from them now than when I did work more and was away from them and needed more breaks. And it's because we've built that relationship together. We understand each other, and, you know, we set boundaries with each other as well. It's healthy. But I mean, as great as it was last night, Tara was a fantastic, amazing host. I miss my kids. I can't wait to go back and see them. And I mean, the fact that I were away at dance competitions this weekend, I'm like, oh, two of my kids I'm not going to see all weekend. That kills me. And I not to say that there's not public school parents that feel that same way. Absolutely there is. But it has generally become normalized in our culture to, like, kids have been devalued. They're a burden, right? And that bothers me. They're not. They are the biggest blessing. Homeschooling and being with them has been the biggest blessing of our lives. And I am 100% happy to sacrifice everything else to put them first in this time period.
Yeah, we often in my private community, we change the mindset from sacrifice to opportunity.
Oh, I love that.
Because unschooling or pulling your kids out in this fashion and changing your life this way is really a reclamation of freedom. It's a reclamation. It is kind of, the biggest thing you can do against the globalist movement is to reclaim your sovereignty with your own children and your family and say, you know, here and no further, may you enter. We'll take it from here. Thanks so much, globalists. And that's, it's a beautiful thing. And I know it's hard at the beginning. This is why I created the community, and we have coaching calls every week, is because people really struggle that first year, right? And so if I can create that bridge and be that lighthouse as people were before for me, it's night and day, because now I'm so saddened that I had them in the system at all. you know, from preschool and then to grade one. I pulled them in grade one and grade four. Like, I'm like, I just regret. I just, you know, there's so many blessings in COVID. Like, thank goodness that it happened, because I've had the last 4.5 years, whatever, every day. I haven't missed a beat. And it's true, you know, you get to this point, you're like, at the beginning, you're like, oh my God, how do I acclimate with my kids 24/7? This is crazy, you know. And then, you know, when you have the right coaching, when you have the right supportive community, it happens. And then over time, you're like, you get into a rhythm and a season that works for you and your family. And that's why when you saw three different cases yesterday in unschooling, the reason that they're not followed and studied and there's books on it is because typically unschooling families, we don't subscribe to that. We don't want to be poked and prodded, nor our kids. Every family is different. And people actually don't believe that they are allowed permission to have that kind of freedom. Like when you said that one family went away for 6 months for the rodeo and they did the whatever, they were already doing it. And people would write it off as like, oh, well, they're an athlete, so that's okay. But most people have been conditioned that they need to fall in line to be a good parent and be in the system. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. This is what we do. This is how we live our life. Like, we were born in this control matrix that we're breaking out of now, which is amazing. We're pioneers of the new earth.
Every time you say, and I saw people laughing, kind of chuckling and nodding their head and then thinking about it last night, every time you say, I'm thankful for COVID, I think it's a really, you know, for, here's a huge portion of the population, or maybe the world, or I don't know, maybe the freedom community. I don't know what part of that population, still angry. Like, mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, there's lots to be angry about, but like, sure. I can't live there.
Yeah.
I just can't live there.
Yeah.
And every time I hear somebody say they're thankful for COVID, I'm like, yeah, like I can't, like I try and put myself before mm-hmm. COVID. And don't get me wrong, I got a lot wrong through COVID and still continue to get lots of things wrong. But like the eyes are open mm-hmm. and I can't go back. Like you just, and there was a time, you know, the reason I'm so curious about when you first went homeschooling is I used to call, Ken was there last night. I used to call, got a group, a book club, five of us. And I used to call them like, I don't know, daily. There was a month in COVID where I'm like, I think I'm just going to go get vaccinated. Like think of, I laugh mm-hmm. about it every time where I'm at right now. And the fact I was interviewing all these doctors and lawyers and professors and everybody, and they're all saying, do not do it. But the amount of pressure that was on everyone, I was like, I'm just going to go do it. And we'd have it out. And I'd be like, I just want to be Cypher. Stick me back in the matrix. I don't want to be here anymore. I can't deal with this anymore. If this is going to be life for the rest of time, I can't do this. And it's funny because that growth took about a month. And then all of a sudden it was just like, oh, all right, we'll just move on. We're going to get yelled at or people have tuned me out and everything on. I always look at homeschooling or anytime you do a really big change in your life, there's going to be that like moment of time mm-hmm. and now understanding. And I'm like, oh yeah, there's going to be like, I guess I'm like, there's going to be a period of time where you have to shed what you were doing before mm-hmm. because it's going to be so and you don't realize how subtle it is. When I left Ottawa and picked up my wife from the airport, we drove there and I'm sitting there with my sister and there is, I don't know, I've never seen an airport so empty, 50 people. Mm-hmm. They're all workers and the two of us. And I'm like, you know what? Let's sit 6 feet apart because I don't really feel like getting rested today. So we had a mask on. I just come from Freedom Convoy. I'm like, I'm not getting arrested. I'm not. Yeah. So we sat 6 feet apart, and every 30 seconds, it would come on the loudspeaker. Please make sure you are wearing a mask and that you are 6 feet apart and social distancing. And I'm like, who the hell are they talking to? But it just played over and over and over again. Nobody's uh-huh. listening, but it's so subtle.
Yeah.
And when you talk about the school system and everything, all these little subtle things, you don't realize how much they add up.
Yeah.
And then you try and break away. And I hope I'm bringing this back to homeschooling. And I'm like, the first, whatever it is, maybe for some people it's a week, maybe it's 6 months. That you said, Shelby, 3 months to 6 months last night. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, to me, that makes sense. Because I had in the middle of COVID, as I'm trying to pull myself away from everything, and every person I'm having on the podcast saying, don't do this, I'm still like, well, maybe I'm going to do it, mm-hmm. right? And that was really tough. That was a really hard hurdle to jump across. And I look at you two ladies, and I see the product of where you're at. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like ungovernable, right? Like mm-hmm. you've pulled yourself from the system. It's
I would say engaging. Too, when you talk about like that length of time is going to totally vary person to person. And for me, I think a huge reason why I felt I went through it fairly quickly, but it was also because I had faith and I understood I mean, like Christianity talks so much about pride, and you have to put your pride away to go, like, right? Like, even when you're talking about, because there's an aspect of like, when I'm shifting my life, it means that what I used to do was in some way or another wrong. And I mean, it's wrong, you know, varies for each family and each person, but there's an aspect where you're like, crap, I got it wrong and I need to shift. So there's almost like a piece of pride that you need to put away and be like, I got this wrong, but I'm going to just, when you know better, you do better, and then just go forward. And I think part of that too is tied to the school system where we try to attain perfection. And so for me, even when I started homeschooling, I'm going to do it perfectly. Remember, you said, I'm going to be the perfect homeschool mom. I'm going to get this right. And I kept telling myself every year, I'm like, okay, this is the year we're going to nail homeschooling and get it perfect. And it's like, oh my gosh, every day is different. Every year is different. And you just flex with your family.
And it's funny, I bet you if you talk to teachers, they probably have the same expectations of themselves.
Totally.
And then every day, like I'll put it to, actually, I won't even talk to teachers. I coach, so where I sit, my kids go to school still, public school. And so I see them a little bit in the mornings and a little bit before bedtime, right? Like I get the time and then weekends. And now they're playing hockey and I coach them. Like, I'm like, I'm going to coach. Yeah. Even if I'm uncomfortable with it, because now I get to spend more time with my kids. And U7 hockey is the funniest thing in the world because kids are an emotional train wreck.
Oh yeah.
I didn't understand moons. I didn't understand what a full moon does. And I'm not sure I fully believe in whatever that is, but I'm like, it's almost proof in the pudding.
It's a thing.
You're like, what is that? Like they show up on and all of them all at the same time. You're like, this is wild. And you have days where I got the best practice plan. And in the first, and this was the hardest thing as a coach to learn is like, just throw it in the garbage. Yeah. We had a practice this year. All the kids, like I got 10 kids on the ice, 5 and 6 year olds. And 7 of them are crying about like, just, I don't even like a kid, equipment's itchy or it doesn't even matter. Yeah. Little things. And assistant coach leans over. He's like, so we're just going to play games. I'm like, I don't know what else to do at this point. They're sure. And yet that, if you've never been in it before, you'd never see it. And I walk into my first year of U7, I had these practice plans. This is how it's going to be. This is going to be amazing. And I got kids put me on my ass real fast of like, nope, this sucks. And I'm not. And so then you just got to adjust. And once you understand the kids, you can have a lot of fun and actually push them further than I thought they could do. We were doing U9 drills that I thought they would not be able to do. Man. Dang it, if after like the second day of doing it, they weren't doing it. I'm like, holy man, I'm learning something here again, right? And kids are great teachers that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of the premise of unschooling is child-led learning. And there's this call interference principle that they call. And it's about understanding that you can be comfortable in the unknown, where school wants you to you need to know it. You need to know the answer. You need to memorize, regurgitate it, tell us so that we can make sure you're learning and then check off so you can go to the next step, right? So this non-interference principle is about stepping back as a parent. There was this guy in India, Sugat Mitra, and he did something, a science experiment called a hole in the wall. And he put a computer in a brick wall in the middle of Calcutta in the slums. And he did this over and over again. And anyway, scientifically, what they showed is that children actually self-organize and teach each other and themselves if left alone in a safe, open environment. And so they had this computer and none of these kids had ever seen a computer before. And they didn't have any instructions, nothing. And you see one, and they filmed it all. And you see one kid go up and he's looking at it and he's figuring it out. And then, you know, he's showing the other kid and this and that and stuff. Like learning is the most natural, spiritual, self-organized thing where even in this podcast, we're sharing information from a place of curiosity and presence, right? But we steal and rob that in a school system. And if you ever actually watch children learn, you'll see that when you have, you know, one bossy child, you know, the one that comes up and says, well, I know this and let me show you this, you'll see other kids just walk away from them. When you see other kids be inspired by each other and how they actually learn, they're learning because they just come up to another kid because the kid's doing something and the kid's like, yeah, I don't know, I did this and this is how I moved the car and I put the sand here. Oh, okay, well, let me try this too. And they can actually, with less interference, lead and teach us where they need to go. And what it requires, though, is such a deep respect for children and their path. It's like, almost like a spiritual notion that these little humans have something inside of them, a path that they need to follow, and we're here to help and nurture it and unfold. Where government public schooling is, we're here to mold the minds of the youth the way we want them to be. So if your values are no longer in alignment with our government or our global government or the WEF or any of these people who have their tentacles in the powers that ought not be, then how can we entrust them with our most valuable assets anymore?
Before we go on, so I don't forget this, talking about valuable assets, thanks for coming in today. And I almost forgot. Here's a gift for you. I'll pull us back to the conversation. I'm sorry, folks. I look over, I'm like 48 minutes. And the two ladies are lovely. I love everybody who comes in person, sees me dance around the cameras and like doing, well, silver gold bowl. And
this sponsors, is where I get mine.
Sponsors the podcast.
Oh, and, yeah.
This is
I
awesome.
Order mine from them. Yeah.
And one of the things that we've done here in 2024 is anyone who comes to the studio gets an ounce of silver.
Thank you.
And two freedom awesome. Homeschooling moms, I think, get the importance yeah. of we do. Silver. You know, it's probably like, what's more important, silver or lead? I'm sure we can have go down the rabbit hole of that. I'd be curious what homeschoolers think of those two. But either way, thanks for coming in and doing this.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that'll wonderful. Be something you can stick in the safe, I'm sure.
Yeah, and show the kids for sure. Yeah, I got them to in 2020. Like, I mean, they were only like, you know, 9 and 7 or 6 or 8. And we're not using the banks anymore, kids. Okay. Don't even worry about those bank cards. Let's drain the bank accounts and keep it all in your mattress. So we made our little piggy banks. That was one of our little modules that we did for fun. And the banks are corrupt. Like, it's quite funny. I mean, there's a difference between a regular homeschooling mom and a freedom awake aware homeschooling mom who's like, yeah, no, those are chemtrails, kids. Well, let's learn about chemtrails today. Okay. And what's next? We drink raw milk. It's illegal in Canada. That's what we do. Okay. But we outsource it and we're real quiet about it.
You made me choke on water. For the listener, I'm like, I was trying to take a sip of water. And
well, have you seen, my husband sent this to me. He's quite a funny fella. So George sent me this reel of this like homeschool mom and public school mom sitting on the playground together. And of course, like the public school mom's judging the homeschool mom. And then she's like, well, does your child know? And I think it was something about like the Declaration of Independence. So they called over her kids. They couldn't regurgitate really anything about it. So called over the homeschooled mom kids, and they like, she spits off all of this information and she's just like sitting there all proud. Then all of a sudden the kid goes into, yeah, it doesn't really matter anyways with the globalist agenda. And then she's like, whoa, like cut it off. Like, we're talking. And I thought, same with, he sends me stuff about, you start off with homeschooling and then you have chickens and milking cows and sourdough. And it's like, oh man, that's us.
Well, that's becoming ungovernable, right? And ungovernable sounds like you're overthrowing the government, but it's just becoming removed from government control.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean,
more tied you are to the system, the easier controlled you are. And that's why a lot of people don't want to leave. Yeah.
The more dependent you become, the more you have to start to sell off bits of your soul.
Yes.
Totally.
Right. Because you're like, oh, well, we need this because, you know, and how am I going to, and removing yourself from a lot of the government systems and the government control and the government way of life is uncomfortable. Until it isn't, and it's actually quite freeing, and you're like, you get to sit and, I just sit here and I, you know, some days I'm like, I was watching you two ladies, all three of you last night, but I was laughing at Tasha because you were saying things and then you're like, am I allowed to swear? And I'm like, well, Tasha, is anyone going to stop you anyways? Right? No, I'm like, no, because nobody's going to walk in and say, you can't do that. Yeah. You've been like, well, I'm going to do it anyways.
I know. It's like that MMA fighter, that Sean Fredrickson guy who's like, isn't it Fredrickson?
It's not Fredrickson.
No? Sean. Okay.
But I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And he starts spewing off and then he looks at the guy. But he looks at the guy on the side. He goes, did I overdo it? I know I was supposed to not swear. I know. But he got me going, this guy, you know, just. No, I guess no one's going to stop me from swearing. But, you know, you got to try to appeal to your audience. But it was good.
Well, that's good. The thing with COVID and everything else is it's opened me a whole bunch of ideas I knew nothing about or didn't really want to explore. Tasha, you know this because me and you talked when we came back from after you came back from Ottawa about having you on. I was like, I just can't do it. I just right? Like, I mean, but in fairness, Shelby knows a lot of my journey with faith. And I was just like, there was a time I wouldn't say the word when Reuben Mays, he was a running back for the New Orleans Saints. I had him on and he was originally from North Battleford, and his family fled. His heritage was the first black settlement of, I think, Saskatchewan. You can still go see the burial plot and I forget what they call the building. Regardless, interviewed him. And at the end, he said, oh, by the way, I just want to say I want to thank God for everything. Or it was so like harmless. And I was like, do I edit that out? I'm like, do I have God? And now I look at where I'm at. I'm like, oh, man, like, you know, there's so many things that I said I would never do. And yet here we are, because the more you learn and the more you explore, the more you're like, oh, that's not good. Like, I gotta try and help alleviate some of the stress that comes with that. And I look at the silver that I get to, you know, like how it aligns with where I'm at. Are there other ways? Oh, certainly. Right. Like Vance Crowe, shout out to him with Bitcoin and different ideas of that nature. Like, there are other ways. When it comes to silver in particular, I'm pretty bullish on it because of what I see the markets doing, what I see the banks doing, what I see everything doing in society. I'm like, oh my goodness, like, we got to do something to help alleviate some of the stress that can and is probably coming in the near future.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. So, and it's like that with everything. I mean, you know, anyone who's awake and aware at this time, their minds are just, it's like peeling back an onion. Like, almost every facet of society and every institution has got some kind of corruption linked to it, or something's being played out. Like, we are literally being attacked on all fronts. I feel like rapid fire from every institution, medical, government, education, you know, the financial institution. And when you start to look really deep into this and go down these rabbit holes, you see, oh my gosh, it's the same people. The same ruling class elite families are also the same families who actually got together with government to create public schooling. The Rockefellers, Rothschilds, the Peabodys, the Morgans. And these people are quoted, if you go back into history and look at some of these texts, and you see that they said, like, here's a really interesting fact. The guy who created standardized testing, right? Everybody thinks standardized testing is a great way. You know, you separate the wheat from the chaff. Our kids need to know it. They stress themselves out. They want to commit suicide trying to get these SATs, all these things. And we got to start them in kindergarten. I mean, this is the process you got to go. Well, the guy who invented it is literally quoted, Hinken, in 1920 something, as saying, we have to create this so that we avoid a mobocracy and we make sure and ensure that there's not too many chiefs to Indians. That's what he's quoted as saying, for the guy who created standardized testing. So once you kind of unravel these things and go back and see the foundations of compulsory school, the dark history of it, this is why I don't think there's any reform. Like, people will often ask me, they're fighting at the school boards. And you see what the school boards are doing right now, right? They're just turning off the mics of the parents. They have sex activists working all through all the schools. They're being hired. Oh, and by the way, we didn't talk about Bill 67 of the Education Act, which is in the second reading right now in the House, in the Senate. They are literally changing the definition of racism from an unconscious notion, a conscious notion.
Into an unconscious.
Into an unconscious notion, and that it should be criminalized within the school system, and that any teacher who graduates out of the program has to agree to that notion, just like the military has to as well. And they have to take all the DEI training. And if you're going to move up in your tenure or through the social ladder of the education system, you have to agree to that notion. So you see the great setup. Like, it's a setup, right? The Orwellian thought police are now going to be criminalizing and having power legislatively to act. So, like, this is all within the system, the school system. And but, like, when you're talking about peeling these onion layers and discovering these things, it's the same people. It's like the human farmers are passing the keys down generationally to their children over and over again. And these same families own 98% of the world's resources and are running and herding and culling the human farm.
So this is why when you walked in, I was watching videos. I had a guy on, Michael Wagner. Anybody? He wrote the Christian Guide to Citizenship. And then he wrote some books on Alberta independence. And I forgive me, Michael, there's a bunch of other things. But one of the things that he said, and I just can't get my brain around, you know, you're talking about the different families across the world, right? Mm-hmm. The Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, obviously that's the United States, but they're tied to a lot of different places. Notably the empire. Mm-hmm. Just leave it as that. Mm-hmm. The one that's really bothering me lately is the Trudeau's, mm-hmm. because, you know, like I was just saying, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, you know, I've had Brian Peckford on here multiple times, and the importance of that document, And then you start digging into faith, and you start looking at how everything's written and God at the top and why they do that. And then everything changes in the, you know, in the 60s and leads up to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in the 80s. And after that, then they repeal the Lord's Day Act, which, you know, opens up a can of worms. And then, you know, abortion's legalized across Canada and, mm-hmm. you know, and on it goes. And it's just opened up all these doors. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so was Trudeau a moron? Like, senior? Or was he a real, everything I've watched of him say he was brilliant, great orator, mm-hmm. And that which led into Margaret Trudeau, who I didn't, you know, and people always joke, oh yeah, she was psychotic, bipolar. And I just thought it was people slandering her. Mm-hmm. And yet now I'm watching her I just finished watching her 60 minute interview from way back when, and she is quite bizarre, mm-hmm. and free thinking and out there. And, you know, you get the Fidel Castro jokes and whether that happened and if it's true and on and on and on. Do either of you homeschooling moms know a whole lot about the Trudeaus? Like, have either of you looked into our history to a very pivotal point, which is the Charter of Rights and Freedoms under Trudeau, and where that's taken? Has anybody? And to the listener,
a
if you
bit,
got
but not not you, to I think what you well, sounds like you've done more. Which
well,
is good.
I'm like, to me, I want to understand our country and how we get here because it's being influenced by the outside. Nobody can argue that anymore. Like they're finding the Chinese just like. Everywhere. The CSIS is, even they're like, we could probably be doing something with this. But like, have you know, in the dark agendas, like, I'm like, okay, yeah, I see this coming. What is it about this point in history right there with Trudeau in power back in the 70s to 80s? And it sends us from here to way the heck over here. Mm-hmm. In, you know, it's been 50 years.
Well, I mean, if you go back to, you know, David Icke, and you go back to some of these guys who've been talking about this stuff for 30 years, you know, we have satanic pedophiles at the top of their networks and the higher echelons of leadership running the planet. And that's a hard pill to swallow, but it's actually true. Now, that doesn't mean that the entire world is filled with satanic pedophiles, but there's enough of them that have enough power that are being protected. And you can look within our own country here. I mean, you have pictures of Trudeau with Ben Levin, who's the one that tabled the SOGI curriculum in the House of Parliament, who was convicted of pedophilia and distributing and producing child pornography. I don't think he got his bank account frozen, though. I'll tell you that. Mm. But he was at the Pride Parade with Trudeau and Kathleen Wynne, and he only served 2.5 years of his sentence. So we have that. We have Trudeau, who's his roommate was convicted of pedophilia. We have Trudeau, who was aligned at the Picton Farms, living a couple miles down the road from him for a couple years, and going to these parties at the Picton Farms. Like, it's not hard to see, even Senior Trudeau.
Can you tell me about the Picton thing? Because I've heard briefly about this, but I feel like it's like the new, not the new buzz thing, but like it's almost like it just got uncovered. What is it with the Picton Farms?
Well, the story is that, you know, what we were sold were, you know, these two creepy guys who, you know, stole these women, these Indigenous women,
and
fed them to the pigs and all this stuff.
But
then you find out that they have ties to our politicians and to this elite wealthy group of people in Canada, and they would actually host parties out there. So there's that connection. Like, how is that a thing? What is that about? Why did Trudeau live?
Where did that story come from?
I don't know exactly where it came from. You can just probably look it up now because this is what everybody's talking about.
But I mean, that
about.
Is interesting because didn't they make a Criminal Minds episode based off of that? And so I always start like realizing when they start normalizing why do they want us to know this?
Well, I don't know. But I mean, if you look at some of the pictures, like as a mother, and I'm not saying some pictures don't, you know, dispute, you know, different stories. But if you look at some of the pictures of Senior Trudeau with some of these kids down in Africa, wherever he was, Epstein Island, I don't know. I mean, I know Justin Trudeau was on Epstein Island. He's on the flight logs. But when you look at some of these pictures of the senior with these kids that are crying and he's got his face like Sean, as a man, okay, let's just call this out. I mean, we have to get back to common sense. As a man, would you be comfortable picking up anyone's child but your own, and holding them so tight when they're crying, and taking a picture for somebody and their face is planted next to your face?
The answer is no.
No. As a man, you don't really want to put another child on your lap, do you? That isn't your own and you don't maybe really know, or maybe some kind of, unless that child, you had a connection with them and they came and sat on your lap. So you see all of this stuff. You see all of this behavior.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy Savile or whatever his name is, the one that's protected by the royals. Like, and, you know, he hung out and was with the mentor, and George Soros, who's mentoring Christina Freeland. Like, there is a big social group, a big cult, and we are not invited, right? There is a group of elites that have grown in together. Like, I believe that Trudeau was born into this role of his life. That's probably why he went into drama. He's probably been passed around at parties. Who knows what happened to him? But I mean, he's void of a soul. You can see when you listen to him that he is void of a soul, and he is just playing out the role of his life. And so don't you think that Senior Trudeau actually is the one that set it up? And the Conservatives, like even Stephen Harper's the one that signed us up for the UN agenda. I mean, they're all in it together. Whether they all knew it or they knew the big scheme of things, they all tee each other up. I believe that Trudeau and the Liberal Party are teeing up Pierre Poilievre.
I agree.
And Pierre Poilievre is going to take us to the next level because he believes in climate change. He doesn't speak about anything until it's safe to do so. Yeah. It took till the 11th hour to say anything about the parents having the right to raise their own kids. Like, he'll only say hi to the truckers when it feels safe and he's not sure. Like, he is just so wishy-washy. He's such he's one of the puppets. Like, come on, you guys.
I agree.
He denounced Christine Anderson.
Yes.
He denounced her. He made the people in his party apologize for her coming to visit us. Are you kidding me? The only MP who spoke up in the EU against Trudeau? This guy is a shill. And people are just, we just fall for it.
I think when you look into Pierre's upbringing, he was basically raised as a politician. So it's like, to me, I feel like he's been groomed for it too, right? Like, it's...
Before we go any further, okay,
back to the Picton farm.
The Picton farm. So the listener, a couple things here.
Are you looking on Brave though?
Actually, I got Googling. I Googled.
Don't Google. So
two things. One is, if the listener knows, I've already sent out messages earlier this morning. If somebody knows somebody in Canada who knows the history of the Trudeaus and just some of the things that I would be interesting to learn about, even if it's just general history, I'd just like to know more. Because I was learning today, he's born in 1919, and they were just giving the general stuff. I'm like, it's still fascinating because I want to know what time he lived through. Two, this Picton Farms thing, I want to know where it came from. But I found an article on the Globe and Mail from 2002, okay? And it talks about they had a reputation for throwing parties. And it was dubbed Piggy's Palace. And they put, what does it say here? One of the Picton properties close to the pig farm was a party headquarters where crowds of up to 80 people gathered and food and liquor were sold. The brothers called themselves the Piggy Palace Good Time Society and sold tickets and advertiser surreys in the papers. Mm. So
that's what they say.
Here's the thing.
I'd like to see that list. It'll be like the Epstein log. Who was at the Piggy Palace party?
Well, and I go, so I go, this is the greatest thing about my audience. Somebody knows what the heck, and they're like, this, you watch.
Yeah.
You watch next to me. I'm going to get a bunch of texts. I'm like, all right. I'm like, well, let's just open it up.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I've been hearing about it, but I haven't really, I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't know. Picton Farms, geez, that's a long time ago. Like, okay, what it would, but now I'm like, oh, what is relevance? And if that's what they're saying in the paper, well, what actually was there and who was there?
Yes. They just tell you the fine lines, right? It's just like the AHS pedophile doctors right now. You can find some of these clips in, you got to dig, and it's on page 8 of B, section B.
And Mackus is getting absolutely lambasted for bringing it up.
Oh, well, and let's bring it up louder then.
Well, and the thing is like, Byron Christopher. I got a special place in my heart for Byron. He was in, if you look on his Wikipedia page, he's an old school journalist from the CBC back years ago. He still does no news release journalism, I think, Byron, if I'm saying that correctly. But his Wikipedia page calls him Armageddon-like blood and crime guts fighting, something like that, journalism. I can't remember. Anyways, he was on stage and he talked about back in the day. If you go back and listen, folks, episode 150 was Byron Christopher, and then he came on one more time. And he talks about a judge in Edmonton and a VHS tape being found in a dumpster. And then, you know, it being put in a thing, and it was a guy molesting a kid. And the guy was a judge in Edmonton. And they took it to the police. And I'm probably doing a horrible job of recreating this story, so please go listen to Byron Christopher say it. And essentially, what happened was the judge retired, was never charged, on and on. And you're like, what?
What?
And this is the same Byron Christopher who had Cesus live by him during one of the stories he was breaking across Canada. He's a very interesting guy. And that's back before any of this stuff was going on, back before, you know, Freedom Convoy went and did what it did and shook the, you know, rang the gong for the entire world, right? So, like, there's a lot of things that go on in this country that, you know, when you say, you know, the Satanists and go right down the rabbit hole, I'm like, I don't know. We're going to get to the crux of this thing or not? We got good and evil. I mean, if you believe in God, and I'm not going to argue it, I believe, you go, well, if one exists, the other exists, and they've been fighting for a long time, and it is just keeps bubbling to the surface in these weird ways. And so when you start looking at all these videos, the only thing I really enjoy is when I can get the context. Give me the context so I can see, oh, okay, that is weird, right? Because, like, social media, the thing I hate about fifth generation warfare is they know how to play on all of us.
Totally.
On both sides.
Yeah.
So you send a 10-second clip, but if you don't see the relevance of it, then all it is emit emotion. Why am I feeling this way? And why do they send that? And why are they doing that? Because I want to understand. I want to get to the bottom of it. I don't want to just be angry. Because angry didn't get me too far when I was in the middle of it. It seems to always be better when I can find out the full gamut of it. But Picton Farms, sorry, this is a long tirade, folks. Picton Farms, Trudeau's, hit me up on the text line because I would love to know. I would love to go into it deeper. And as long as I'm not getting yanked off the airwaves yet, why not? Why not open up those?
He's not suicidal. None of us are.
None of us.
No, it's true. It's good that you say that. Fifth generational warfare is mostly in the digital domain. And so we have to know that they are playing both sides. And so when I see something, you know, I don't want to add to the internet outrage machine necessarily. I want to bring awareness. Sometimes you have to do that. And that's just, you know, the consequence of it, but we can't stay there. And anything that I don't fully understand, I just top shelf it. I don't need to know everything. Everything is going to unfold. And I tell you, you know, when I hear what you just said about the CSIS being close to that guy's house, you know, it kind of like enrages me a little bit. And I just think about the levels of corruption and all these institutions and these people that are abusing their powers. And I kind of get excited because I'm like, this is your time. Like, anyone who's still pushing these vaccines, and Alberta Healthcare Services is, they still have multi-million-dollar campaign pushing this, all the politicians who are being silent, all of the people that are working for CSIS and the military that are working against the Canadian people, I can't wait. You just keep doing it because this is the great of awakening. This is the great unveiling. And through conversations like this, the awareness that's happening, like, their days are numbered. Like, their days are numbered. I can't wait. I can't wait for more exposure. I can't wait. I mean, it just, this is where we're going as a human collective.
The harder they push, the more people that wake up.
Yeah.
Right. Because when things aren't making sense, you can kind of go, oh, not a big deal. But then, you know, take the Freedom Convoy. Freedom Convoy is a perfect example. Up until that point, people were, you know, but there was a whole bunch of people that were like, this has got to change. Yeah. Right. So when the Freedom Convoy happened, they all went to Ottawa. And there was a whole bunch that couldn't. But they paid attention to Ottawa. They shared Ottawa, everything. And the more people that saw what was going on, the longer it went on, went, this is kind of strange. And then they froze people's bank accounts. That woke up a ton of normies.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a ton of people that were, COVID wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
You know, business was good. You know, it wasn't as bad. You know, but then they froze bank accounts. There's a ton of people that value money more than anything. And you take that away from them because you different opinion. Well, look at what they did. I woke up, and so the harder they push, the more people they're shaking out of their slumber. And so you're not wrong. The harder they push.
That's the fear, though, is that they're also playing the game of death by a thousand cuts, right? So we have some kind of false flag psyop, and then they scare everybody. Everybody's preparing. Everybody self-organizes, and then they let things die down. And now, do you notice everybody right now is going back to their lull? lots of people in the homeschooling community are putting their kids back in the system. People think this is over. People think people aren't even wanting to talk about accountability as much anymore. They just kind of want to move on with their lives, not understanding that if we do not keep bringing this up, it's going to take 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or maybe 1,000 more VHS videos or CDs or discs of all these pedophiles that are all around us that are protecting each other. Like whatever it's going to take, like this is just the beginning. This is not the end. Like we have to hold these people accountable for COVID, for all of it, for everything, because otherwise our kids are going to have to deal with it. And this entire last 4 years has been a huge data collecting experiment for these people. They have been data mining our reactions, how we've played this out, what to do next time. There's a reason that there's laws trying to be passed right now so that they can't mandate, the government can never mandate vaccines, and they won't let those laws pass. Why? Because they know they want to prepare for something else. They know they're going to do this again. So are we going to let this fall on the backs of our children, or are we going to hold these MFs accountable? Right? I say.
Get her wound up.
I get wound up. Let's get them. No, but honestly, to stay in our source of power, we have to create parallel societies. All of us are doing that. That's what we're doing, right? And so that's how I stay joyful and in my place of power, really. I can get fired up, but then I have to shelf it, and then I have to go create and create community and, live outside the system.
I actually loved, it was Daniel Bulford. You just had him on not long ago, and where he talked about that, like, just doing what you can to break away from the system and live a sustainable, like that has an impact. Mm-hmm. Like we don't need to create these big, community,
around,
but like
you.
We don't need to create these big, like giant rebellious organizations necessarily. It's do what you can on an individual scale.
Well, they get hijacked as well. They get hijacked.
And you think you're farming out your, I don't know, I'm not a big sovereignty word guy, but that's the only word that's come to mind. If you farm out your sovereignty to somebody else, it gets corrupted just as quick. So you said it last night. The first thing you got to do, it's a Jordan Peterson thing. Clean up your room.
Yeah.
Work on yourself. That does not come fast.
No.
It takes time. Yeah. And then you work on your house. Yeah. You think if everybody did that, then you'd have a real strong community.
Yeah.
And everybody would be firm on where they stand. And we're just not doing that.
And if you really look at it, the Bible actually speaks to that. There's verses about have your house in order. Right. Mm-hmm. So like if we just take it back to that foundation and those basics, and that's what we're missing from society. To me, all these agendas have been slowly removing that and, getting rid of the family unit.
What did Solomon Davies say? He said the devil comes to steal, destroy.
Kill, destroy. And
kill, destroy and steal. Steal.
Yes.
I think that's what it was. So if you're looking for the devil in the world, you just look at what's playing out and you go,
there's a great book called Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. And it's a book that he wrote back in the 1920s, and the family kept it in a safe for 70 years because they were terrified that they would be ostracized by their community if it came out in public. And it's a conversation that he had with the devil. And the devil has to tell the truth when you ask him. This is how the story goes. And basically it goes down to, he explains how he controls 98% of the world's population through drifting is the word. And basically that's through honeypots, drugs, alcohol, food, everything that you can imagine, but mainly the school system and the church. And so it was because of that they waited until he died and until his second wife died before they published this book. It's unbelievable. It'll help you.
I was like, why do I know that name? A ton of people, I think, will know him, and maybe I'm wrong on this, Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
He was the guy who wrote Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
I didn't realize Outwitting the Devil sounds like C.S. Lewis's like Screwtape Letters or something along that lines, where it gives you a look into the demonic forces of the world, and you're like, oh, this
is— And how you're playing a part in it, and how you're—
And how they play a part in you.
Yeah.
Like how they try and work subtly in your life. Like it's really—
Very subtle.
Very subtle.
Yeah. Like food, for example, like when they talk about food, overeating, and how that keeps us in a lull. Like, why is it that society at this point in 2024 has not stood up? Has not. This is why I pulled away from the freedom movement and some of the political organizations over the last few years and just focused on building my own private community of homeschooling, unschooling families, is because, I would show up to these events and it's people kind of like with pitchforks, so to speak, angry still. And they're smoking and they're drinking and they're bringing their beer to the thing and they're mad and they're out there and they're smoking pot. And it's like, you guys aren't getting it. None of you are taking any self-responsibility and realizing that, okay, it's great. You avoided the vaccine. Awesome. But where else are they getting you? You think that there's not a reason why the government had all the pot stores, the alcohol stores, the toxic takeout.
The amount of fast food.
You don't think there's a reason why all that was open? The Costco's, the cabal Costco's were open. You think that was just because for our convenience and they closed down all the mom and pop shops? No, they want you to poison yourself by your own hand. You guys should look up Jason Kristoff. He's my coach. But anyway, he's a great resource for mind control and psychological operations.
Would he come on?
Yeah, me. Yeah. I bet you I could get you connected with him. He's pretty busy, but he just did that huge event down in the States with, I think, Jamie Soleil and Theo went to one. He was speaking at it.
I'm about to say COP28. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah. That's
it was the big climate. Giant concern. Not COP. Yeah, right. Duh. Not COP.
CPAC. Thank you. That's what it is. Thank you.
I knew if I spit out a COP28, everyone's What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Oh, yeah. Did I mention I went to that vote? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways they're getting you. When it comes to life, but like, that's why you have to, like, you can't farm it out. You have to, what's hard about this? And that's what's crazy about the homeschooling thing. You know, I'm keep bringing her all the way back to homeschooling. Mm-hmm. I hope I am. Mm-hmm. I heard last night, and you two ladies got to tell me if this is true. And I can't remember maybe one of you said it, that there's no homeschooling in parts of Europe. Like that's not even an option.
It's illegal in Germany, France.
France made it illegal in 2020, which is very interesting, right? Macron,
made homeschooling illegal.
Yeah. And so I have a couple clients in our membership that are in there, and they are really struggling because now they want the kids, they want them all vaccinated, and they want them now at 18 months and three years old. Like
Was it Gibault? Who's the guy in Canada out and in Quebec, or maybe it was Ottawa, who said there are kids, the state's kids.
Oh yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
On the street?
Yes.
That was on the street. That was in New Brunswick. And then there's a guy more recently that just said that there's no parental rights. There's parental responsibilities. I've got his name on.
Yeah. There. He was an MP,
he's
right?
NDP, NDP, MP.
Yeah.
There was a guy in New Brunswick.
So you can already see, you go like, oh, that's for, I have this, I have this thought. I remember being in Ocean Wise Black, getting arrested on the outdoor pond in Calgary and watching the video and thinking a couple thoughts, right? He was unreasonable. He should just, what was the big deal, right? You want to talk about indoctrination. I'm a living, walking example of like, I was just like, now when I think back, I'm like, he was skating on an outdoor pond. That was insane. And there was lots. They put literally sand and gravel on an outdoor pond, like, dear God. Mm-hmm. But I remember thinking also, like, that'll never happen in Lloyd. You know, it just never happened in Lloyd. And so when I take that same micro example of Alberta and put it to a macro, like the world, I hear France doing that. And I'm like, you just wait, like whether it's 5 years or 15 years or 20 years, like the longer we go, the more they're probably going to try and cinch up that you can't homeschool. So, we were talking about guns last night. Mm. And one of the things about homeschoolers is like, or gun owners, whatever, is the larger you are, if I've learned anything in politics, if you are large and have a voice, politicians have no choice but to try and listen to you. That is Pierre Poilievre in a nutshell. That's all he is. He just, if the poll sways him to parental rights, he'll come out and say parental rights again. Yeah. And if the poll says it isn't, then he's probably going to come out and say, well, we think this and this and this. If it says Ukraine, we need to donate money, he's going to go donate money. If it says not, then he's going to try and talk around it that way. It is a wishy-washy politician who's trying to do what he thinks the population wants instead of actually being a leader. So when I bring it back to France, I go, oh, that'll never happen here. And I catch myself every time I say that in my brain, every time I think it, I guess, because I'm like, oh man, that is wild to outlaw homeschooling, or to be like, there's no more homeschooling.
Yeah.
Like,
they have to ask permission. Like, I have one family who was able to do it last year and got denied for this year. So imagine that happening. But the UN right now is already stating that homeschooling needs to be eradicated worldwide because it comes from privilege, and privilege is not part of the DEI, you know, circular thing that they're trying to create worldwide. So
homeschooling comes from privilege.
Yeah, it's a privilege to homeschool, and so in order for us to, in the name of equity, we're needing to eradicate that. So they're already on it. I mean, because really what they want to do is create chaos and order out of chaos by creating the one world government, right? So to create that one world government, we already see what their policies are. I mean, they only want you to travel, you know, once every 3 years on a big trip, and once a small trip once a year by 2030. I mean, that's some of the climate action plans, right? Right now in Creston in BC, you should have seen, I just read the whole policy on chickens. You have to have your feed out. You have to have them up. The gate needs to be open at this time. The amount of control that's happening right now that's like moving in on us. So it's just a matter of time that they do that for homeschooling. So my message is do it now, before you are in a position where you're going through that transition period that we talked about that's really tough in the middle of the war, so to speak. Like, mm-hmm. Do it now so that there's so many of us that when they come, we are loud and we are like, here no further will you come. You know, that's, and I mean, there's like 5 million homeschoolers now. I mean, it's like 126% increase every year in Canada. So it's happening.
It's because every year Canada gets a little dumber.
Yeah, it gets a little crazier.
And I would say too, Canada, I think it will be a bit of a harder and longer game just because we don't have federal education ministers, right? Mm-hmm. It's provincially based. And so it's going to, how can the federal government make it illegal when they have no say, right?
I know, but the federal government continues to do things that
we didn't think they could do.
100%.
Yeah, and if we don't empower our politicians to push back, right? And I hate it because it's like they should know that. But if the population doesn't get angry, because I look at the 1 million March for Children, you go, was it successful or wasn't it? Well, at the time, Pierre said nothing. But off of that has come a lot of different things, including Danielle Smith coming out. And, you know, I've had different people on to talk about that, and then Scott Moe and what they did. And now there's a lot there to unpack. But once again, politicians go where they think where the tides kind of. Right.
Yeah. I mean, they're just like a bunch of beta males and people playing the game. I'm so done with politicians. Politics is not going to save us. Like, we're never going to find, until the human consciousness changes, we will not have the leadership we're looking for. Even Danielle Smith is playing the game. Love her. Great. Thanks for speaking out about parental rights, Danielle. But what you just did is you just opened up Alberta as the number one place to do trans surgeries. You're bringing in trans doctors. You're capitulating to this ridiculous unscientific notion that this is a thing and not a social contagion. That's a political and pharmaceutical agenda. You're capitulating to both sides by, yes, you have parental rights and we're going to do this, but now Alberta is going to be the number one place where you can chop off your body parts to this satanic ritual. It's crazy. And she's still not holding AHS feet to the fire and releasing the all-cause mortality of deaths, all of the sudden deaths. AHS is not releasing this. Why are we not talking about the pedophiles that the NDP was paying off leave, you know, that are running our chief medical officers? I mean, the vaccine has got $1 million campaign around it still in Alberta. I hear the commercials. Why? People are dying. People are dying and they know it. So I'm sorry. Every politician in this country is corrupt on some level, is playing their game, playing their critical, their career path. And I don't care. And I'm just a mom from, nowhere. And I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it because I have the balls to say it. And so Danielle Smith is not the be all end all. No, I don't believe we're lucky. It's as lucky as saying, oh, I should be really thankful that, you know, Panorama is the one ski hill that let us actually come in without our vaccine card. I was supposed to be so thankful. Well, I'm not thankful. I want somebody who's got balls like we do, who has nothing to lose, who's put their neck out on the line, who doesn't care, who has faith in God and says the truth, you know, the truth. And I'm done with the beta males. Not you, Sean, but
I don't know. I get called a what's the latest critic?
Have a critic?
Oh, I got lots. What? But the one that's Dustin Penner who called me out after my last Danielle Smith interview saying I threw softballs, and I get that comment a lot. Just throwing softballs up there. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I guess Dustin Penner needs to find out. Well, and others.
Then he can do it. But I mean, I would have different questions for her too, because, you know, and I think it's hard and it's intimidating because she's, I think, somewhat awake. I think she's been red-pilled and she's on our side. But I think to get into power where she is, she had to play a political game, and there are things and deals and backdoor things that have to be done.
Somebody asked me the other day, like, how are you getting Danielle Smith on? I'm like, what do you mean? She came on when Kenny said it was a pandemic of the unvaccinated. She was literally on this show the day it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how did I get her on? I've had her on through all of COVID.
Yeah.
And so then she comes in here and I feel like it's pretty open. Doesn't mean I ask the greatest questions, but everybody who listens to this bloody show knows I let the people come in and talk. That's what the whole point is. So like, you know, when... asked her about Coots 4, right? Mm-hmm. You can love or hate her answer, but I'm no lawyer. I can't sit here and I would say Artur Pawlowski did the most offense on her. Now, maybe he was right in the way he did it, but they recorded the phone call. Then they released the phone call.
Yeah.
Then they got her charged for violating ethics. It's like, we're biting the owner. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, we're gonna hold her feet to the fire. Fine. But she literally took a phone call with Artur Pawlowski. They recorded it. Then they released it and called her the Antichrist. They didn't call her that, but you get the point.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what do we expect is going to happen? She's going to put up walls and start to guard herself
for sure
from this movement. Like we're doing it to ourselves.
Yeah, right. The freedom movement is eating itself. I think that there's medical genocide going on. And I think that we overlook it all the time because we're being so gaslit about it.
Yes.
And there's people dying everywhere. I just went to another funeral last week, you know, turbo cancers everywhere. The people that are vaxxed are clearly, most of them aren't making the connection. And nobody wants to rock the boat because someone dies and you don't want to be the person that says, well, are they vaccinated? And, you know, so everyone's just kind of being quiet, pretending that they can go on and move on. But what I'm saying is, Coots 4 tragedy, absolutely. Lots of things going on, trans stuff, tragedy, but let's focus on the real thing. We have a medical system that is using our taxpayer dollars and are complicit in harming Canadians, in maiming, injuring, and killing. Our government is killing its own people. There is a medical genocide happening and nobody is willing to address it or ask the hard questions of why is AHS not, why are they not releasing the data? Because I can guarantee you, that even if you believed in COVID, just the mere data on how many people have died in Alberta alone over the course of the past couple of years would blow open the door to at least have a conversation. Let's ask her. Why is she, why? I know that there is a huge, you know, power struggle and so many inside things happening. And that's why I don't have faith in any politician, because what I see is her needing to play her political game, her political career to stay in power. And you'll have a million people that will say that. They'll say, well, she's got to do that. You know, it's like Trump. Well, he had to say that. Well, did he?
Yeah.
Did he? Because put me in that position. Let's put me and Sean and you, Shelby, let's just go take over and let's see what we can do. I'm not saying that there's not going to be, but I'm not going to make the whole system has to crumble because the entire thing is based on money and backdoor deals and lobbyists to get into the position in the first place. So you make these promises and you write these checks that you have to cash later.
Or even to me, blackmail. That would be, as much as I'd love to be a politician, I'm like, I have a family. And I'm like, I can only imagine the blackmail. And I think that is something that I am fine. Take away my job, take away my house, take away everything, but go after my kids. Yeah, you got me. So like, that's why I'm not in that position. But
well, I mean, clearly I get it. Kenny was blackmailed. Well, you know, maybe all his little visits in Thailand. I don't know. But something happened there. I saw it on his face. I don't care what anybody says. If you have any discernment, you know that they had something on him.
Well, 100%.
So, it was one of those VHS tapes. I'm just going to say it right now.
He went from having, showing the Great Reset book and we're open for summer and all these different things to.
Boom.
Yeah.
But like a light switch moment. Yeah. Like the door opened and, you know. If Sean ever comes on here, folks, and is like, I don't know, Justin Trudeau's the greatest. Just can't wait to have him on. And I start walking the line. You know, something probably happened back door. It's like, I'm just leaving. I'm done with the show, folks.
Yeah.
Let's hop over for all you lovely listeners who've been along for this ride. This has been fun to have you two ladies in. We're going to keep them for one more question. We're going to slide over to Substack and have the last part. This is new. Neither of you.
Can I bring up one thing before we do it? Kind of voucher system. I've heard a lot of people in Alberta wanting to be like, yeah, let's do voucher.
So the voucher, just so I'm clear, is wherever your kid goes, the money follows them, right?
Well, that's what we technically already have. But a voucher system is essentially so, like, you know, let's say it's $7,000 of funding per kid. So now you get this check as a parent and you take this check to wherever you want to go. But technically, we already have a voucher system. Wherever your kid is registered, that's where the funding goes, right? So whether you choose private, charter, public, homeschool, you know, the funding's not equal. But that's where I mean, it sounds great at first to be like $7,000 no matter where your kid is. Awesome. But again, I caution of, do we really want equal funding? Because, like, to me, if homeschooling kids get the same amount of money as a public school kid, but we're not regulated the same, is that going to really fly? Or eventually is it going to be a backdoor for let's add in more regulation? You know, and same with, like, we think about independent schools. They are able to kind of interview and choose which kids attend their schools, right? But again, like, they do get a little bit of less funding for that. If they're getting the same amount of funding across the board, when's there going to be a time where it's like, okay, that's no longer allowed, right? Like, everyone, to me, it's like, it's a sneaky way to have that equality sneak in.
Right. Well, I don't trust the government as far as I could throw them. And yeah. I don't want to take a cent from them.
And that's what I think too. People who, you know, it's funny, you know, especially with homeschooling, a lot of people do it to break away from the system. So it's like, why do we want more money? That ties us to the system even more. So that's where I've seen.
If we could control it. Like, the fact that we don't get the $7,000 as moms that stay home with our kids, it just supports evidence that this is a billion-dollar industry that they want to support. And they do not want parents to be awake and aware and to take matters into their own hands. Because think about all the bureaucracy. I mean, the Ontario school district is the number second employer, the number two employer in Canada. The biggest employer in the United States is the education ministry. So these are, forget the kids. We have so many made up jobs and bureaucrats and red tape at the top.
We have a minister of cutting red tape.
Yeah, reducing, that we're paying.
Reducing red tape.
Yeah.
You know how you reduce red tape? You hire Sean and we'll cut some red tape real fast. It'll be about 5 days. We'll be in and out. I'll piss some people off. That's fine.
Let's do it.
And away we go. It'd be nice and easy. I was just having this conversation because Alberta went from having 12 cents off gasoline and now they're bringing it all the way back, all the way up. And I haven't, I'm told it's because we need the money. I'm like, need the money? Give me 5 minutes and I'll cut a bunch of jobs. I'll find the money
no
for
kidding.
You.
Totally. No, like, kidding.
Now we're going to slide over to... You know, to the listener, if you're watching, I don't know when my camera overheated and decided it didn't like me, but hey, that's what happens. So we're going to slide over to Substack where the video will actually be back up because I've learned these little tricks of the trade. So we're going to take a brief pause and then we're going to slide over to Substack for one last final question.